Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Oh, my name is Eric. I'm here with Michael Kester. I think I might put up a screenshot or something, or it would have to be a picture of our recording setup today.
Photo, yeah.
So far, it's good. It's really good.
It's all right, functional. So yeah, I like this.
I want people to imagine we're in full-blown studio regalia here.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the mics live. They're going into mine's right straight into a mixing console here, going into an iMac here, a MacBook over there. But then to talk to you, because somehow we can't get the machinery to do what it normally needs to do. It's like unitasking right now. To talk to you, you're on my phone.
Yep.
On a FaceTime window.
Living the dream.
You know, fucking forbid that we try to talk without being able to like stare at each other and snicker. That just wouldn't be possible. And I couldn't prop this phone up. So what I've done is slid my headphones through the top of a Starbucks cup.
Mm-hmm.
And that now acts as a stand, which gives you about enough height. I think maybe I'll put you on top of this thing. There we go. So I'm talking to Michael live from Starbucks cup on FaceTime.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, with any luck, the show is still going to be fine. It's going to come out
It'll
the way
fine.
It always
I mean,
does.
Yeah. Right. Classic.
Oh, MacGyvery over here. What the fuck are we doing today on this show?
We're going to talk about two directors that a lot of people know about.
Mm-hmm.
I think is kind of the deal we're going to talk about. But I think we're also going to talk about sort of auteurism and how that works with the public eye. I think there's going to be a little bit of that conversation.
I would also, if we get time, I'd also like to talk about a plot mechanism. I guess this is just The Beach. This isn't for both movies, but an interesting thing that The Beach does to drive forward its plot and to create a sense of turmoil, and it's all one unifying thing, which is telling secrets.
And then we're just going to talk about sort of the way evil befalls an individual. I think would be the context.
And that evil is befalling Leonardo DiCaprio. We're going to talk about how his life is, how he had it all with The Beach and then it all disappeared.
It all just went downhill. So we're going to do Unbreakable, which is an M. Night Shyamalan film. It was the movie he wrote in Chicago. And then we're going to do, The Beach, which is Danny Boyle. So M. Night Shyamalan, the name typically precedes the guy. He is the creator of the film The Sixth Sense and then went on to be extremely well known for his twisty tales of intrigue and suspense and also that movie Another Earth and Avatar The Last Airbender. He did those.
Also did The Visit recently as well as Split, right?
Sure. No, we'll get into, I think we're going to have to get into him because I feel like Unbreakable is in a lot of ways an odd duck of his filmography, more than some of the other ones we've mentioned. And then Danny Boyle, the name typically doesn't ring any bells, but he is the creator of your favorite zombie film. Not yours. I'm just speaking generally. The Royal You.
You're talking about the guy who did Trainspotting 2, right?
Trainspotting 2, yeah. He also did...
the surprise release that came out the week we fucking posted Trainspotting.
Yep.
Maybe we'll tell that story on the show today.
He also did 127 Hours, 28 Days Later, Slumdog Millionaire. You and I love him for Sunshine.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And he is both of these guys in their own right have been wildly acclaimed as filmmakers.
Yeah.
I know that Danny Boyle has gotten his share of Oscar nominations. I know that Shyamalan got a couple as well. But I think also within the context of these movies, we're kind of going to talk about how the things around you operate outside of your own doing or within your own doing. And I think that that's going to play into both of these filmmakers' sort of careers as well.
Super cool show. Super cool double feature. We're going to spoil both of those movies. So if you haven't seen them, you care about the things, the goings on within them, definitely see the films. Also, we just encourage people to do that because sometimes these conversations, see you last episode, don't make any fucking sense if you haven't seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like to listen to podcasts to see what movies you should see, I would recommend Unbreakable and The Beach this time. And just watch them. And whether you like them or not, your life will be irrevocably changed forever.
Yep.
And then to help you deal with that, you can come on the support group known as Double Feature. I should also say that we have a Patreon.
We do.
Patreon.com/double feature.
Yeah. To celebrate the gobs and gobs of programming that we have crammed in the ear holes of literally tens of people.
Yeah. 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 Well, so we have some people on there who have been helping bring the show along for this year. We got Killapalooza coming up. We got another Journey episode coming off. We got a lot of stuff that we want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a hell of a month or two or 10. And we really appreciate everybody who's been on there. So if you haven't given to the Patreon yet, join us up on there, even if you can only do it for a couple months, because it's been a rough go the last couple months. And I don't know about your life, but I assume with October coming, you're going to be just as busy as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a little... The ship's very heavy right now. I can feel the weight. I can feel the pressure. We could really use a hand, just being frank. Last week, I had mentioned that I have that trailer out now
mm-hmm.
for my film, for Disposition.
Mm-hmm.
It's a short film I made for festivals. We put it out during Suicide Awareness Week, but it's a movie that is about depression. It's about medication, about suicide. And it's playing in theaters. It's a short film that's playing in fucking theaters, which is so cool because one, low-grade anxiety that's just been running throughout the last year of my life is, you know, that I made this film. I showed this to you like a fucking year ago.
Yep.
And then you just wait around. Crickets. Seeing if festivals want to play your film. So huge thanks. We're playing the Brooklyn Horror Film Festival,
mm-hmm.
which I'm really excited about because I knew what that was before I made a short film. So
that's awesome.
That makes me happy. But a lot of the other festivals, I mean, I know what they are now. They're playing my movie. So that's cool. If you want to see it, I'm going to go to every state that I can go to, guys. I mean, I'm really just going to try and make this work. You never know when the thing you made is your last thing. So I'm going to assume it's this one, even though I'm working on a bunch of other stuff. I want to let this movie finally have the fucking moment it deserves. So I'm going to New York beginning of October. We're playing at a con at the end of New York, ScareCon, which is really cool. And then Oregon, we're playing in LA. We got a bunch of different places and I'm going to try and go to all of them. You should come to one of them. You can go to dispositionfilm.com. That is the trailer. And it's also got a list of everywhere the movie's showing, all the festival dates. As soon as I get them and can post them, there's a lot of like weird embargo stuff I'm still figuring out with festivals. You don't want to like blow their lineup for them.
Sure.
And be right. Like, hey,
yeah,
we're going to be right. In this block. They haven't announced
people yet. People might still want to buy tickets. They don't want to know they're showing
right.
Your movie.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. So hang out at those. There's also all these festivals have really good movies playing at them too. So even if you don't catch mine, you can probably.
In addition to my film, they're also showing good movies.
Yeah, they're also showing things you'll actually care about, like feature films. And I'll probably be in a couple of those. So just, you know, throw some popcorn at me or something. Anyways, lots of exciting things these days. Are we doing Unbreakable first or are we doing Beach and the Unbreakables?
We're going to do Unbreakable and the Beaches. Or as I like to call it, Split Zero, Hypersplit.
Uh-huh, good.
So, and that's kind of actually where I want this to live in the beginning of this conversation. So M. Night Shyamalan, we did The Happening on the show with The Room, and we had a weird conversation about So Bad It's Good versus So Bad It's Bad.
Yeah.
And that, I think that was a pertinent conversation, and I don't regret having it about The Happening. I'll tell you what I do regret is that being the only M. Night Shyamalan we've covered on Double Feature.
Agreed.
Because I don't think it's fair to undercut the fact that this guy has made some incredible films and some really, really important films.
Man, and I'm with you on that 100%. I think time is going to bear out two things. I mean, I also think, let me get the other one out of the way first. I think 20 years from now, we're all going to be talking about how fucking cool Rob Zombie was.
Yeah.
And how, like, this is, you're already seeing that with, like, Lords of Salem, right? Yeah. I mean, everyone knows that 31 is the best movie, but after that, it, you know, like, there was no dispute of that from the day it opened. But Lords of Salem, people are starting to go, like, oh, this movie was ahead of its time. It came 5 years too early. You know, now this sort of bleak, surrealist, Kubrickian weird thing is all the rage, and Lords of Salem was hitting that early. Whatever. That's Rob Zombie. I think people will turn around.
Okay. Yeah.
But fuck, man, M. Night Shyamalan, I don't know if I've ever needed to do a bigger mea culpa on the show.
Yeah.
And I think as a society, we all need to do that him. Because we took his good films for granted, and we let what at the time, I won't even say today, that there is bad films, because I don't trust myself. I need to go back and watch them because I was clearly so wrong.
I know.
But we let a bad film or two, or mostly our preconceptions as a society and what we wanted out of him, fucking ruin these movies of a truly visionary filmmaker. Got a bad shake.
I think that, you know, M. Night Shyamalan quickly defined himself as somebody who made movies with twists. And I think when he felt the weight of that, I think it kind of buckled him for a minute. I think he did the smartest possible thing he could have done with that, which is went ahead and did other movies anyway, and just kind of took his name off the top of the bill. You know, I think of a movie like The Visit, which is scary as shit. And I think we just kind of had to let him come back and do Split and go, yo, okay, so Unbreakable. That's why I wanted to do Unbreakable, because Split is fucking great. And I went, wait, was Unbreakable good? I don't remember it being good. Turns out it's real fucking good. And similar to what we talked about with one of the films last week, it's incredibly weird to watch it in the cinema climate of 2018.
Yeah.
Because you and I have 100 times over talked about films like Super, films like The Specials, I guess that's two James Gunns in a row, and you're not supposed to talk about him and superheroes at the same time anymore.
No, you can give him two.
Okay.
That's the rule.
Yeah.
Two and a writing credit.
Good. Got it. Cool.
That's some deep James Gunn.
Yeah. Fuck that.
Love you, James.
So I think that looking at Unbreakable as sort of God, there's this weird mythos that Mr. Glass brings up, which is sort of something that you and I talk about with religion a lot. Again, something that you kind of invoked last week, but that there's a grain of truth to all mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the cornerstone of this film, is that comics are a version of pictograms, which are a version of, you know, passing memories and messages on from the great past. And so you have the idea that there is this man from Earth type person who isn't
another film in the back catalog, The Man from Earth.
Yeah. That isn't explicitly super, but is biologically superior by some way that we're supposed to believe. And that's it. Like, you don't need, you know, a vat of radioactive spiders that you get thrown into by a mad scientist.
Right.
You're just born better. You've evolved. And it's the basis of an entire fucking X-Men series, is that you're just born mutated.
Totally.
And so you have this Bruce Willis's character who's born mutated. or M. Night Shyamalan, who's born visionary. And I'm serious. And society goes, okay, well, this is the expectation then. You know?
Well, see, that's where I differ a little bit with what you said before. I'd push it even further. I think when we say something, and by the way, what I'm about to say, I think is true most of the time, even for, like, I want to call us out on it. But we talk about, oh, a director did this, and then he made this choice, and this choice, and this choice. I think that's mostly us reading into things and projecting our own narratives. I don't know if he thought any of that. I don't know if he thought I'm going to pull back from the spotlight. I don't know if those were his decisions.
Sure.
I don't even know if he felt the pressure to have twists so much as all of society said, oh, you're the twist guy. And then like template matched and looked for that in every movie.
Sure. Well, and I mean, I'm not even saying that he pulled his name off the top billing, but I can definitely tell you that studios did.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I mean. After Avatar, man, like if M. Night Shyamalan directed a movie, you had to look in the block lettering at the bottom of a poster. Yeah, it wasn't M. Night Shyamalan's The Village anymore. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm happy he's coming back. I think, you know, watching Unbreakable is one of the, if you weren't buying into this argument before now, Unbreakable, like, man, is this movie ahead of its time or what?
Mm-hmm.
This is a movie that still felt a need to explain to an audience what comic books are.
Yeah.
It felt the need in the beginning to go, a comic book is a book with pictures, and they're worth between $1 and $140,000 or whatever. It probably just said $140. I don't know what it said.
No, it was definitely $140,000.
Yeah. And so, yeah, definitely. You'll be getting some tweets about that, my friend.
Only from you, Eric.
Definitely on the show. Watch as I tweet Michael the opening card from Unbreakable. If you could get fucking patents on movies, M. Night Shyamalan would be the richest person on earth. Oh my God, for Unbreakable.
So that is a
Well, seriously, man. This movie created the template for what every superhero movie is today.
Sure. I mean, it's Chris Nolan's Batman trilogy in one film.
Totally. Well, and Chris Nolan, I think, had success with those movies in a way that allowed for the whole genre to expand afterwards. But the question with the Nolan Batmans were not, how do we make it dark and gritty, which kind of became DC's thing, and a lot of different things that was a moment for that in film. But it was also, oh, let's try making this in the real world. How do we do that? And I think a lot of people resisted that 10 years prior, or even the kind of late 90s occasional comic book film. They went, no, make it as, you can see this in The Punishers, actually. The Punisher we covered on the show, the Thomas Jane Punisher, is sort of a real world type. I know this runs a little counter to the timeline I'm building, but the one after, Warzone, is like a Dick Tracy, this is in a cartoon world kind of movie.
Sure. Don't spoil Warzone, because that's going to end up on the show for sure.
Hell yeah. So there was a lot of, you know, there was an idea that, oh, you got to turn into the cartooniness. And Unbreakable goes, no, what if it's a guy and instead of a cape, he's just got like a hoodie, you know, that's kind of, that's every Marvel TV show now.
It's a raincoat. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's every one of these fucking, like, this is how you do a real world comic book movie.
Right.
And the fact that he did it back then, and that ended up being the approach to how we could grow this whole genre. Why are people not giving him the credit for that?
God, I don't fucking know. And so this movie is also really impressive. Let me tell you, so I know it's the ending of the film, but I think it's honestly the moment that M. Night Shyamalan, to me, proved his vision better than I've seen most directors be able to pull this off. Is the film builds up, it even has a dialogue between Bruce Willis's character and Mr. Glass's mother, where she says that there's two villains. There's the one that you fight with your hands and the one that you fight with your mind. You know, that dynamic, which is duh and brilliant. And a massive setup for this trilogy, by the way.
Yeah.
But so he has this hand-to-hand fight that's brutal. I mean, puts fucking holes in walls, right? It's the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one he fights with his mind, man, like that setup, that like clash, he just walks away and calls the cops. Like, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And that to me, that is the moment where M. Night Shyamalan, if I'm picking, so let me just be completely transparent here. If I'm picking the biggest twist in M. Night Shyamalan's filmography, I'm going to go, it's when Bruce Willis calls the cops on the supervillain.
Yeah, right.
It's when the superhero who's invincible calls the police on the guy in the wheelchair.
Yeah, well, you fucking saw how that plan turned out, didn't you?
It's just like, to me, it's just M. Night Shyamalan being like, I know, like everybody's like, you're expecting this big clash and this big like showdown, but well, like, but
I don't know. Are people, well, I mean, because I think so much of this movie, we also look at now with our, we know how superhero movies go vision. You have to remember that back then the whole mystery arc of this is not superheroes, right? Are they superheroes? No, they can't. Yeah. That's the whole, like, is it, isn't it? You're supposed to be sitting there questioning if Bruce Willis has powers.
Yeah.
Instead, today, I think if you just found out about Unbreakable, you're like, yeah. Superhero movie, right? So what are we doing here?
Yeah, right. He's got powers.
Yeah. I don't think you question that for a second.
Invincible guy who can sense people's crimes. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People are ready for that.
That's the first 10 minutes when he's like a young boy and like he gets beat up at school and then like he feels that
the pearls fall on the ground in slow motion. I've seen it.
He feels that the bully is like bullied by his dad. So then he goes, he takes out the abusive father. All right. That's the first 10 minutes. What happens after that?
Yeah, which is crazy, right? Because you, and we're going to talk about this a little with the beach too, I think.
Patent pending. Yeah.
I think that's also, these are movies that are ruined by how much we expect movies to do these days.
Right.
But Unbreakable just simply kind of sets that up. And then your suspension, it's kind of relying on your suspension of disbelief to the whole time go, well, we know superheroes aren't real, so that can't be it. Oh, but could it?
Right.
And yeah, and you're right. Today, that's just crazy. We're just like, yeah. Superheroes.
Sure.
Cool. Does the house have the devil in it or not?
I think what's really amazing to me about Unbreakable as an M. Night Shyamalan film is I think that, you know, The Sixth Sense will always and forever be the crowning Shyamalan film because it's the first one. And it's in a lot of ways one of the most amazing things that came out for a long time. Everybody saw it. It was a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. But I think what I love about Unbreakable is that we're moving into this trilogy with Split and Glass, where he managed to come back. You know, you talked about how he's kind of having this resurgence and people are looking to him again. But I think by doing a bunch of one-offs and then this trilogy based on Unbreakable, I feel like he's going to be able to define his career by his best films.
Kind of cool, right?
Something people don't get to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, even Tarantino doesn't get to define his career by his best films. Mm-hmm. Tarantino gets to define his career by the guy who did Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Sorry. Like, I don't care if Jackie Brown's better. I don't care which Kill Bill you like. I don't care whether or not Death Proof counts as your 10 because you did Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And you will always be the guy that did Pulp Fiction.
Well, maybe unless he gets that third Kill Bill out, then maybe.
Not happening. Don't count on it. It's not going to
happen. But that's what I say about every Tarantino movie that comes out.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
Hateful Eight will never be a movie. We all know that that's never, Yeah. That Nazi movie you wanted to.
I'll believe Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when I'm watching it in the theater.
Yeah. He's like filming that in my living room right now. And I'm still like, no, I don't think so. That's a really great thing for, I just feel for as much as happens in the world and in film that is bad or trends that I don't like or whatever, every once in a while, there's like an unsung Shyamalan that comes back and makes me feel really cool.
I just feel like, so to talk about careers, and this is a segue of the career conversation, M. Night Shyamalan, his career. So, you know, I think of something, you know, the phrase that people usually throw around for people like this is a Teflon man. You know, that's a Robert Downey Jr., somebody who had all these fucking scandals and then comes out somehow with nothing sticking to them and everybody thinks they're great. M. Night Shyamalan had the opposite.
Yeah.
Everything bad that happened to M. Night Shyamalan is what people remember. And all the good stuff he did, people kind of go, yeah, but he's the twist guy who made Avatar.
Well, and also he lived and died, and I mean died, on his art. It wasn't even a personal scandal.
Yeah.
Drug abuse.
Yeah. Nothing.
He was a fucking monster. It was literally people went, ugh, that guy's art.
Yeah. Ew, Lady in the Water was confusing. And then you have somebody like Danny Boyle, who I will argue is a Teflon director. And let me tell you why. Because when I read Danny Boyle's list of films, the ones people remember, he got fucking Oscars for. And the ones people don't remember, they don't care about.
Yeah.
You have 28 Days Later, you have 127 Hours, Slumdog Millionaire, Steve Jobs, Trainspotting. But, and I mean this with complete sincerity, I knew The Beach was a film that existed, and I had heard nothing good about it.
Right, right, right.
And then I looked it up on a recommendation and I was like, Danny fucking Boyle, what? And it's the same thing. It's the same conversation you and I have, I assume, with every single person about the movie Sunshine.
Yeah.
And, you know, Entrance, you know, the movies that Danny Boyle makes, two movies for every movie everyone remembers. And the ones people don't like, people just don't stick to him.
Oh, yeah. And what was that that other movie of his we did, Shallow Grave?
Yeah, which is killer, but nobody knows about it.
Yeah, Shallow Grave and I think Sunshine are the two in, you know, in his sort of backlog that really bum me out that people forget about them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll be honest, man. So The Beach, when it came out and everybody hated it, I'm seriously watching this thing. I'm like, how did everybody hate this but like Trainspotting? This is just tropical Trainspotting.
Right.
And I mean, I get that there's missteps in the fact that this came out in the 1990s or whatever, and like movies sucked then. And so it suffers from being of the 90s or early 2000s. I mean, whatever. It was 2000, right? When it actually came out.
I think so, but yeah,
that's the 90s for cinema. So it suffers from like a shitty soundtrack and DiCaprio as a heartthrob instead of an actor. Well,
the soundtrack is very of the time. It's
Yeah.
And so is the DiCaprio, but had this been one of those, I mean, this seems like it could really sit there in a late 60s, 70s kind of film.
Fucking A.
You know, and nobody would, if it was coming out around like when MASH was coming out somewhere around that time.
Yeah. If that was fucking Mia Farrow instead of Tilda Swinton, duh.
Yeah. But in a way that makes some of these movies, guys, you can go back and watch a movie where Leonardo DiCaprio and Tilda Swinton totally bang. That's a real thing that exists.
Mm-hmm.
Real fucking movie. You believe that?
Danny Boyle brought it to you.
Crazy.
The same guy who cut off James Franco's arm.
This spoiler. This is but you don't know what movie. Could be 28 days later. You don't know.
Love Steve Jobs.
It's Shallow Grave, obviously. The grave was too shallow, his arm wouldn't fit. That's what happened in that film. Yeah, so The Beach, much like this is my, and I know this isn't why you set this up, but I really love this as the single worst double feature to go after a mindfuck like Enemy and Perfect Blue. Mm-hmm. That's what I really love today as, because those movies are so complicated, so beyond their surface, like beyond what you're ready for, complicated.
Yeah.
And then we have a movie that's like, yeah, okay, strong dude. Comic books, I get it. Thanks for telling me. And the other one's like, guys, what if you found a map to a beach? Then you went on it. It's pretty good. And that's like the whole thing. The whole time I'm like, when does the beach turn out to be on the moon? Like when?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew of The Beach. I had never seen it until I watched it for this show. And like in my head, I'm like, I don't know, it's probably sharks or some shit, because it's 2018. So if you tell me there's a beach, I'm going to tell you there's sharks.
Yeah, right.
But I'm watching it and I'm just like baffled by, compared to Unbreakable, which is about this perfectly innocent guy who accidentally gets into a train crash. And then like shit starts happening to him because he survived. and that mm-hmm. sucks. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you have this other movie about this guy who's like, I don't know, what if I do some bad shit and then lie about doing bad shit?
Oh,
and
yeah.
it gets worse for me. Like, it's about the opposite. It's about a whole bunch of people that are like, this could ultimately be a fairly innocent scenario if you just weren't shitty about it.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's the thing that gets me about this movie is Tilda Swinton's character, you know, and she gets her comeuppance or whatever, if you want, but she's unapologetic about her agenda here.
Yeah.
So at the moment when everybody's like, oh my God, you would have killed him. I'm like, dude, are you kidding?
I'm yeah. sorry. Are you watching this?
Have you been here the whole time? Do you remember when she put the shark bit guy in the forest because he was annoying? I think she's down to shoot somebody. Oh my God,
this is like the final boss on the Mortal Kombat lineup of kids who push their friend off a boat or whatever films.
For real.
This is like the thick of it, man. So he gets his map to the secret community, right? And then he goes...
No, he gets his map to a secret island. There's a question mark. What's there?
Well, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. There was some amount of mystery.
Is it Jason's weed field? You don't know.
Yeah, right. I forgot that there's at least an enigma for 10 minutes of this film. There's mystery.
Yeah.
But it's got a very... Got a backpacking through Europe kind of vibe.
Yeah, right.
In a sort of hangout film kind of way.
Sure.
And so...
Whatever's there is good enough to kill Robert Carlyle. And so you know it has to be serious shit.
So I love that the hangout film is the utopia. It's like the thing that everybody wants that's so good, the bliss that we bask in is the fun moments of Jackie Brown. It's like the... Sitting on the couch with a beach girl watching gun videos or whatever the fuck was going.
Mm-hmm. AK-47.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmarish future America now that we look back. But, you know, at the time it was a fun hangout experience. And it's corrupted by the layers and layers of secrets that are built between every faction. As you know, you look at a micro faction, you look at a person who's got their own internal secrets, and then how they got here is a secret, and then their close group of friends all have secrets amongst each other. They're part of a community that is itself a secret, and so there's layers and layers. And the nested layers of secrets create all the drama, all the conflict. I feel like 100% of the problems in the film are directly tied to secrets. Even them basically torturing that dude and then leaving him. Christo, was that guy's name?
Yeah.
The poor guy in the Henry Gale that they leave out in the hot air balloon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're on a tropical island. I mean, it's not that much of a stretch. Come on.
Yeah.
All of it, you know, that's preserving their secret. I guess maybe the shark attack is the only thing that's not directly a result of a secret. But sharks biting off chunks of people's legs still feed into, well, we have to preserve ourselves. We have to keep everything a secret.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the way that he gets out there, the very sharing of the map, you know, and then he gives the map to these other people. He can't tell anybody about that. And so when he gets there, his entire presence there is predicated on, well, I wouldn't even call it a secret at that point. I'd call it a lie.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing that I really like about it is in making secrets the conflicts of the story, you're forced to play that nasty little game that starts to happen with secrets, which is, am I lying by omission?
Yeah.
Or am I keeping a secret?
Sure.
And as soon as you tell someone you're keeping a secret, are you just saying, I am committed to lying, but not to you?
Yeah.
like, so everything that happens beyond that is, you know, there's a love triangle right away with the people he fucking brings. So that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the girl on the island, and when she finds out his secret about the map, then suddenly she coerces him into this weird like sexual mutually assured destruction kind of thing going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And when she breaks that, it's not just that it tears that whole community apart, but also you kind of forget, I forget as I watch it, that the whole thing is nested inside this major secret they're keeping from the other island people, which is, oh, hey, we won't invite any more people here. Don't worry. Right. It's just me and my friends. We're just going to be cool here. And then the island people walk in and they're like, you built a fucking city in here, you assholes. Like, you were not supposed to do this. And so at the end, it all kind of falls apart. And I think that's kind of a cool thing for a movie that hired DiCaprio seemingly as a, what did you call him? Like a teen heartthrob?
Yeah.
Doesn't that kind of sort of force the movie to be a coming of age film?
Like, yeah, by mistake.
Those sort of do. Yeah, right, right.
If it was DiCaprio's last movie, the answer is no.
Right.
But instead, DiCaprio is now allegedly in the next Tarantino movie.
All comes back to that Tarantino around here. Always.
Yeah, and I mean, with this character, that I think is
could
where
you
these
imagine
two films,
if this was Leonardo DiCaprio's last film, and we were like, oh yeah, that...
I can, because I'd be like, well, yeah. Of course he never got work again.
You'd be like, DiCaprio, he was that kid from the video game scene in the beach, right?
Right.
He did that where... What the fuck is that scene, by the way?
What? No, you're thinking of Elijah Wood, right?
No.
Oh, no. Elijah Wood is the video game scene in that other movie.
Right. Oh, my God.
Honestly, my disbelief suspends sheerly by the fact that that other group of people also finds this island. I'm surprised. They're just dumb. I'm just really surprised they even made it.
Right. That's not a secret so much for you as a bet. Well, you're just like, nah.
Yeah, that's the thing is when he says, I didn't give anybody a map. Honestly, if I were him, I would be like, this is safe. Those guys were dumb as fuck.
Right. Totally.
And lazy. They'll never make it.
But part of the other inherent question, if I want to push back on the morality of this, is he really seems to narrate this as a person. I mean, look, this is what we do at Double Feature. We get analytical. If this is an overly analytical conversation about the beach, that's just what happens here on Double Feature. So, so look, this might be the, should we go as deep on the beach as we did on Enemy and they all get equal time? I don't know, but that's the show we're on. What I was going to say is that his character narrates this as if he's talking about a fun, that's how I spent my summer, you know? Lessons learned.
Right. That's what I was going to say. The end of this movie is definitely, and that's how I spent my summer.
Yeah, right. And so the question that kind of brings up is, would he have been better off telling the truth? Because he did get this whole, if he tells the truth, if he doesn't lie or does not omit things, if he's totally honest, he probably stops right at, I mean, every single one of these developments in the plot is expanding the experience for him.
Mm-hmm.
So every lie that he tells leads him further down the adventure. It's sort of that's conflict and that's bad, but he has no adventure if he's not a liar. If he's not keeping a secret every step of the way, then he doesn't have a wonderful time in Bangkok.
Sure.
He basically gets sent home. When he goes, I showed the map, they just go, fuck you, then leave.
Yeah. So you've identified the point in the movie where it would have been a short film if he had just
made
what you and I may call the right decision.
Well, but that's what I mean is the movie is not really, we're sort of starting to talk about it in those morality play terms, but it's really not because it's basically going, yeah, I'm in a great mood. I had a fun adventure. I remember all my friends at Camp the Beach.
Right.
And here's how I got there. By lying all the time. A lot of people died, so that wasn't really cool, I guess. And that's how I spent my summer.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you talk about... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, I again, like to tie this back to the director here, like that feels like what Danny Boyle gets to do with the beach now.
Yeah.
You know? people go, so what the hell happened with the beach? And he was like, oh, you know, me and Tilda Swinton and Leo DiCaprio, we just like went on this tropical island and like some weird shit happened. I don't know. That's how I spent that summer. Anyway, right after that, I did a film that you all must see, you know, called fucking Trainspotting. It's like, okay, dude. Yeah, I guess that's how you spent your summer.
Listen, like, I want to firmly plant the beach flag in the sand here for one specific reason. You mentioned the ending of the film, but I really want to call out, we've talked about famous go-to, these always work movie endings.
Mm-hmm.
There is, of course, the crane shot.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you could score swell.
Mm-hmm.
You could back out slowly while the score is swelling on a crane.
Yes.
Out of the village, out of the town.
Freeze frame the high five, Tango and Cash style.
And so these always work, but do any of them, ask yourself, work as good as the remembering your memory by looking at a slow loading JPEG on a computer ending?
What? Double clip?
You tell me if there has ever been a better tension mechanism in a film. Oscillating fan and Paranormal Activity, you got nothing on the slowly loading JPEG fucking ridiculous ending of this movie. It must go down in double feature history as that movie with the JPEG. There is no other option. This is it. I'm telling you right now, that's how the beach gets.
TEH_beach.jpeg.
Oh, with the E even. You're so good at this. Yeah. You're so good. We're just going to craft memes without coming up with any of the visual work. We'll just tell you what they are. That's doublefeature.fm, patreon.com/doublefeature. I want to really sincerely thank the executive producer of the show. I know I mentioned the Patreon just now and earlier and still, but I wouldn't have known about slowly loading JPEGs, nor would I have had this chance to say, I'm sorry, M. Night Shyamalan, you're wonderful, if it weren't for the show today and this ongoing series of shows brought to you in part by the executive producers. Aaron Shore, Abbott of Unreason, Athena Banks, Ben Ecker, Charles Crawford, David Anderson, Keisha, Mark Abbott, and Tom Leonard. You can join up on our Patreon, patreon.com/doublefeature. The reason I keep talking about it is we really need it to go up about $100. So $2 at a time, totally cool with that. You know what? I'll make a rare request. If you're already giving on the Patreon, maybe just bump that up for a couple months, huh? Maybe if you're the other co-host of Double Feature, you want to go on the Patreon, put some money in. I don't think it breaks the rules. I'm just saying. Okay. All right. Listen, what do we got coming up next time on the show?
Next time on the show, we're going to do a couple movies that aren't spooky because we're really close to doing a lot of spooky stuff and we had to buffer the spooky.
So what you mean is movies that'll turn out to be spooky?
We needed a spooky buffer.
Great.
So we're going to do this movie called Coherence that somebody told me to do.
Yeah. And I also looked at this and went, what the fuck? How have we not done this yet?
Sure.
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
We'll give one specific Patreon person, tune in next time, credit for that. But Coherence seems like a no-brainer for us and just somehow hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's going to.
What's the other one we're doing? I forgot.
You're terrible at this. Everyone knows.
I'm just repeating Odd Thomas. I know it's not Odd Thomas.
Oh, dude. I don't know if we actually came up with that show, did we?
I thought we did.
No, I think
pretty sure
maybe
we did.
Maybe we did something else. Did.
No. Did we?
It's a dinner party. We're at a dinner party.
What a swell party this is.
We really should have written it down, huh?
It's a swell party. You're having dinner.
It's 10 Cloverfield Lane. Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I also knew that the whole time. It's the sequel to Cloverfield, kinda. It's just a good movie. So, like, if you haven't seen Cloverfield, first of all, what the fuck? Secondly, see Cloverfield.
Yeah,
thirdly,
don't feel Shyamalan-like guilt over your original opinion of 10 Cloverfield Lane. Just detach yourself from all that.
Yeah.
And watch it with fresh eyes.
Yeah, watch with fresh eyes following the film Coherence from 2013. And then, I don't know, like, watch more fucking film.
And bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.